Hello, everyone. This is Frank Vignone, and welcome to Water Cooler Chats. Today, I'm here with Monica Montgomery, founding director of Museums of Impact and the strategic director of Museum U. Monica, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me, Frank. I'm excited to be here.
I'm always happy to chat with you. We always have great conversations. And my first question for you is, how do you self-identify? Tell me the kind of labels and things that you surround yourself with.
Sure. So I am an African-American, millennial, young woman. I identify as a Black Lives Matter advocate. I identify as a Brooklyn girl with a Southern Belle flavor. I identify as someone who's a hustler, and I use that as a term of empowerment, that I'm able to make something out of nothing and change make and transform the world around me. And I'm also somewhat of a geek and a nerd, Game of Thrones fan, all of that jazz.
Love it. Now, I want to know, and in whichever of those labels, I'm interested in how you think your involvement in the museum field has been directed, restrained, helped by the categories that you just listed.
Sure. Well, I will say, as a millennial, I feel like millennials can conquer the earth and solve all the problems of the world and do anything that needs to be done in the way of community uplift. I think being a millennial gives me a special competitive edge in everything that's happening in the museum world, from leveraging your career to understanding what audiences and visitors need, to really refreshing institutions to give them a new mandate and civic vision. So that has been a wonderful asset and been able to guide my work. I think being a hustler, sometimes I affectionately call myself, or friends affectionately call me, a museum hustler, being someone who is resourceful, who is always looking for challenges and how to turn that into opportunity, that's also been an asset. So coming in this field, literally knowing no one, being an unpaid, lowly intern that got coffee and just was trying to glean as much information as possible, and in the last 4 years, being able to flip that into becoming a thought leader and a museum director and an author and a professor, all of those things have come from my hustler mentality of, I'm going to take what I know and transferable skills and claw my way to the top. So those both have been assets for me.
Now, everything that you just said kind of goes contrary to what the general kind of description of a millennial is, that there is no direction. You know, a lot of times in museums, you hear that millennials are kind of kept in those internship positions where they're unpaid, which is a different issue altogether about the kind of bias against younger people in museums. Talk to me a little bit about if you felt any bias because of your age, or even because of your gender, or because of your race.
Certainly, I felt bias in all of those ways and more. Often when I walk in a room, especially now that I have the level of kind of self-possessed confidence that I do, people are mildly intimidated by me. They don't understand how I got there, why I'm there, and why I deserve to be there. And so being a Black woman in museums is somewhat rare. Being a Black woman in leadership, extremely rare. One of the only Black millennial historic house directors in New York of a handful. So that's also a kind of interesting qualifier. And I think being young and being social justice minded, everyone's always a little nervous, like, what's she going to do? Is she about to start marching and fighting right now? Is the uprising, is she bringing this like rabble-rousing crowd to the museum? And so there's always this kind of tension around what I would like to do in museums versus the established old school way of doing it, the good old boys network. So there's always been that bias, but I thrive on challenge, and I kind of eat that for breakfast and make me go harder, you know, and more relentlessly ambitious.
Well, let's talk about the establishment a bit. You know, the word is being overused right now, but the notion of privilege, that the leadership of the museum field usually is filled with a certain category. And I'm interested from your perspective on that leadership level. There aren't a lot of people of color who are leading museums. You're absolutely right that you're one of a few that are leading, certainly New York City, but also with your age. But in terms of gender, you know, we're starting to see a lot more women being elevated to the highest levels of museum leadership, like a Brooklyn Museum and others. Some really large, important historic house sites also have females who are leading them. What can you tell me where you see the trends in this leadership away from, or do you think it's still supporting the more traditional mode of kind of the straight white male leadership model?
So I think the straight white male leadership model is slowly crumbling, and the word diversity, which I'm often paid to consult and speak about, is bandied about intensely. I think now the straight white woman has become the establishment, and there's definitely white males that are supporting that narrative as well. And so when I see, in the case of the Brooklyn Museum, when I see Ann Pasternak promoted to executive, you know, director of the Brooklyn Museum, I'm excited for her, but to me there's no diversity there. There's no challenge there. There's no new stories being told or new energy being brought to an institution that could use it, that claims to be about that. And so as much as I love the Brooklyn Museum and the people that work there and do great work every day, I'd like to see them push themselves more instead of just talking about diversity. Let's live it when it comes to making a leadership-level human resources hiring decision. So I think the establishment is changing, but not enough for what we're talking about.
And that brings me to the conversation with the staff itself, that most historic sites and most museums are populated by middle class, upper middle class white people. And I was talking to Elon Cook, who, a friend of mine, and I know a friend of yours.
Yes.
And she talked about how many times she felt like the black narrative was ghettoized in the museum community, meaning there's an African American kind of program, or at a historic site, there's a slavery narrative that is separate from the other narrative. I'm interested in how perhaps the staffing of museums and historic sites needs to catch up with maybe the other kinds of ideas that you have about diversity.
I want to touch on your first point, which unintentionally sparked some ideas, which was about narrative. So I find it totally tragic and unfortunate and a missed opportunity that any time we're speaking about African-Americans, Africans, or people of the Caribbean diaspora, it's in relationship to slavery and oppression and civil rights and other human rights injustices. I would love to see more narratives, especially around African-American lives, focus on black excellence, black achievements, black invention, which is the Lewis Latimer House doing a great job of that, speaking about Lewis Latimer, life and legacy as a man championing black excellence and invention. And so too often, Black History Month comes and we do our trope and our dance, Juneteenth comes, we do the what's expected, but it's not really focusing on the highs, and I want to see more of that. To your other point about staffing, I think the staff is slowly starting to shift now that these issues are being brought up, especially by organizations that are government-related, you know, the Department of Cultural Affairs trying to do an evaluative summary to see who really has the diverse staff and what's the percentages, but it's still not enough, and organizations and these institutions know that, to be black and have to work in the front desk, visitor services, janitorial, et cetera, even education, that's a way of getting siloed and not really seeing people as dynamic and deserving of leadership opportunities is the issue at hand.
Yeah, you know, I was talking with Angel Hernandez about the Latino involvement in museums and historic sites, and I think the number of involvement was something around 3% of total
terrible.
Museum staff, and when you dug a little bit deeper, if you included security and janitorial, I think it went up to 20%, but
wow.
Of course, that's not where we need to see that diversity. So one thing that I'm hearing you say is that the narratives, the stories that we're telling, do they need to be told and organized and facilitated by people of color in order for a more kind of full picture of what they can express? Is that one of the things you're saying?
Certainly. The narrative needs to be nuanced and there needs to be agency by the people whose story is being told. So, for example, I recently visited the Whitney Plantation as part of a family reunion. And as much as I enjoyed the visit and it was idyllic in this kind of southern picturesque plantation space, and our tour guide was actually black, I am highly annoyed, offended, and appalled that the work is being done by a white man. Now, thank God that he is holding space for the black narrative, but I want to see more black people taking on that cause, starting institutions, building up new narratives and new curriculums, and not waiting for someone else to hand us a space, but claiming the space aggressively.
Is that because white people are denying people of color that ability, or is that because people of color are not grabbing hold of it? They're not hustlers like you? What's the problem there? Why isn't it happening the way that you'd like it to happen?
Maybe a little of both. I think on a very basic level, sometimes organizations that are white-led and white-run had this presumed air of authority and righteousness, and so everyone defaults to them and looks to them for leadership, for what we should do, for how it should run, whereas black organizations are always seen as, oh, that's the community center, that's the place around the way, they can't have knowledge creation and production, they wouldn't have the wherewithal and the capacity to tell their own story. So there needs to be more hustle and a little more go-gettingness in us as people of color to claim our stories and start institutions that can thrive and scale. There also needs to be more space created within the liberal, white, well-meaning community that is running organizations to say, hey, we're doing this work, but really this should be led by people of color. Let's make space for them. And even if I have the money and the access and the privilege, I'm going to check my privilege and step back so that a person of color can do it in my place.
And that comes right down to hiring that person, putting them in that position, and letting them run with the program, letting them bring their
knowledge.
And also
making them feel welcome, making them feel empowered. Like, for example, so I'm a leader, and I was a leader before I had the title of leader, before I had director in front of my name or after my name, and I've always felt compelled to lead and to create. So many people don't see themselves through that framework, and so when opportunities to lead come up, when my organization, Museum Hue, which champions multicultural diversity and people of color in arts, culture, and museums, when people send us a directorship job to help place it with a person of color, often the people of color say, oh, I could never do that. I'm not there. I need 10 more years. I don't think I have the background. And they count themselves out and discount their own abilities, not realizing that they have cross-functional skills that translate into leadership.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Part of it is empowering our people to see themselves that way and not wait for whatever mythical day of perfection to take on that work. And then part of it is making more space amongst the current leaders to say, okay, we can't just keep going until the diversity talks get old. We have to really do something to make this an issue and pipeline people in.
Yeah, and this is not news to you. I've asked you many times, you know, I fully acknowledge as an older white male, maybe gay, but I'm still privileged in that kind of traditional category, and in a leadership position in the museum field. What can I do to help move this issue along? Can you address that a bit?
Sure. Well, I just did an article for the Arts Professional blog in the UK, and I'm currently mentoring some other museum directors in the Audience Diversity Academy in the UK. So some of the things that I mentioned for taking action on diversity and equity, I would say invest for yourself personally in equity and diversity training to help recognize your privilege and understand different perspectives. There are organizations like Race Forward, the People's Institute for Survival and Beyond that do wonderful trainings that you can look into. Work with other leaders and create a peer group to discuss your experiences, talking about solutions and how you can be an ally and an agent for change. Set diversity targets for your organization and make them happen, saying by the end of this year, we're going to recruit 5 people of color, 2 LGBTQ, and 4 people with differently abled backgrounds, and we're going to do this, and we're going to make that a priority, and we're not going to go to the end of the year and say, we couldn't find anyone. I think bringing people from diverse backgrounds into interview panels and into the hiring process so that the people that are diverse, they're going for these jobs, see themselves, and don't feel intimidated away from the roles is another good way to foster a welcoming atmosphere. I'm always a fan of posting jobs and employment opportunities in non-traditional ways. So if you keep posting in the same places, you're going to get the same results. Why not try printing a physical flyer and putting it up somewhere where there's a critical mass of people, college campus, community center, you name it, letting them know this is an equal opportunity employment situation and you can come and you can apply here, and catching people's eye from a different socioeconomic strata in a different way. And those are just some of the ways that I would suggest for diversity hiring specifically.
Okay, great. And now, you know how I feel about today's paper, and getting stories out of the paper is a really great way to kind of embed contemporary relevance to our sites. And I'm interested in your thought on something that just happened at Yale University, where a gentleman, an employee at Yale, just took a broom handle and went up to a stained glass window, I think in one of the cafeteria, older historic cafeterias, and bashed out a window that had imagery of slavery in it. I'm interested in your thoughts on historic sites and how these elements of symbolism can really affect today's world, the stories that we're hearing about today.
Sure. Well, I'm going to center this portion of my thoughts and discussion with the quote that the gentleman said. His name is Corey Menefee, and it looks like he worked in hospitality within the Yale University system. He said, "You look up and there's an image of slaves. It's the 21st century. You shouldn't have to see that." So he was very knowledgeable, aware, and intentional of the microaggressions and the hurt he felt having to face that wall, face that stained glass window every day. And it bothered him, and it seeped into his soul, and he couldn't stand to continue to relive the pain and the trauma from those days in a current space that's supposed to be equitable and fair. And so when we look at semiotics, the study of signs and symbols and their interpretations, that's sending an unconscious symbol that the university, in honoring one of their founding university fathers, right, former presidents, condones these behaviors, currently supports whatever that person supported, and you're going to look at this window because it's so full of history, not realizing this is all about the oppression of my direct ancestors and the pain that they felt, and not being sensitive to the fact that that would offend me. For example, if we had stained glass windows that had Jewish people enduring the concentration camps, just for the sake of historicity, right, there would be an outcry, because the Jewish community is very aware, and they mobilize, and they take down anything that even reeks of anti-Semitism. And so we have to be equally as ardent, and perhaps his actions were extreme, or perhaps that's what needed to happen to make the institution and the establishment of the powers that be aware that this is unacceptable for us, just like it would be unacceptable for your background.
And I would say probably that, and I'll extend what you just said, that that you would feel the same way about historic sites, historic house museums, historic sites in general, that they're, those types of symbols still exist, and they're not being removed, they're not being changed.
It's true. I think those symbols are kind of all around us. I know that there are historic houses that don't like to embrace the story of slavery and enslaved Africans within the context of their houses and their sites, and that's a missed opportunity. Sometimes people say they're doing it for the kind of psychological good of the audience. I think we have to tell the story, but we don't have to hit people over the head with the story. We don't have to push it in their faces. And if there is something that's a symbol, like the Confederate flag, that's up, that's accepted, that society is not questioning, we need to do like one of my sheroes, Bree Newsom, right, and grab up there and yank it down and say, no, this is not acceptable. This hurts me on a level you would never understand, and I'm taking it down on behalf of all of my ancestors and the current generation.
Yeah, yeah. And you and I have talked about that, that there is this kind of line between, I was going to say a kind of radical historianism, but I don't necessarily think it's radical, I just think it's active, it's proactive.
Right.
It's a kind of a guerrilla tactic of, you know, like at Harvard University where guerrilla historians put names of slaves taped up on houses that were not being interpreted as slavery houses.
There are groups that are doing this work. Like, there's a group when I was recently in New Orleans on business called Take It Down NOLA, and they go around to different monuments around the city and with red spray paint, yeah, put X's on it and say, take it down. So all of the slave owners and the racists and the people that brought emotional trauma to that area, they're X-ing out them as heroes and putting red ink to show this is unacceptable, take it down.
And not only is that an important thing to discuss, but also that may still be in museums right now. The leadership, the boards, the organizations still have a kind of internal bias that we're not talking about. Is that partially what I'm hearing you say as well?
I agree. I think there's definitely internal and implicit biases that we all face, but especially with museum governance and leaders, them thinking that things should be done a certain way, that only certain people should be speaking, the whole phenomenon of white-splaining, you know, mm-hmm, having a white person explain what a black person is intending to say,
yeah,
to make sure that it sounds a certain way. All of these are things that are coming to the fore, and they're bubbling up because the climate we live in America is emotionally fraught, and there's a lot of racial tension, and it no longer can be ignored and swept under the rug. So even, you know, shows like The View, the other day, I was watching The View, and they're talking about race in America, and they did a tribute to the martyrs. I like to call them the martyrs and not the victims, the gentlemen that were killed, and the police, showing that there's compassion for both sides, but something needs to change.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Monica. As always, you and I have great conversations, and we could go on for a long time, but this is just a water cooler chat.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much for answering my questions, because, you know, I really am trying to find the answers to all of these questions. It's thank you so much for helping me.
You're welcome. Thank you, Frank.
All right, Monica. Bye-bye.
Bye.